All right. Good afternoon. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the ITCast Real Talk on Sex. I am your host, Nika Sherrell. The ITCast is our community outreach podcast that aims to increase diversity in conversations on health and sexuality. Through this work, we are creating a world where all people feel loved, honored, and respected. Join us this November. This is your last opportunity to sign up for the Power of Touch, Healing, and Pleasure series. This 5-part Tantra workshop will provide you with more happiness, less stress, and a way to relieve chronic pain. Learn more on our calendar at theitcast.com and also learn how to support the rest of our work. And lastly, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and share with your community. So this week's topic is real talk on eating right for your sex life. And we are joined today by Dr. Mandy Nizami joining us again. Dr. Mandy Nizami is a public health nutritionist and a registered dietitian. Mandy, please join us on the show.
Hi, it's so great to be here.
It's so great to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
So we talked about doing this episode and, you know, a couple of times, and I want you to share just a little bit about what came up for you as we were approaching this.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I absolutely love the show, and I personally know Nika, and she means so much to me. And as we were getting closer, I kept thinking, like, I'm assuming that most of you might know about what we call imposter syndrome, which is, you know, feeling like, oh, am I the right person? Am I really like the expert to talk about this? And I really felt so much discomfort, for one, in the topic, you know, as a health professional, as a doctor in public health, as a nutritionist, as a dietitian. I was like, oh my God, is this okay? There was so much that came up for me. And again, if it wasn't for the fact that I gave my word and really being committed to transforming how we talk about sex, and how, you know, I just felt there was all this like taboo about it. And I was like, what if my students see this and they're going to be like, oh my God, you know, there's, you know, Mandy talking about sex or all of that. And I thought, you know, that's what I'm committed to. The reason I've been coming on the show is, yes, my commitment is all people live the best quality of life through nutrition and exercise. And my commitment is also that we have freedom. We have freedom in saying and talk about, food and sex, right? And just being able to have the freedom to talk about this conversation that means so much to me. Again, So thank you for kind of bringing that and talking about it. And I'm really excited to share some of the information that I've gotten and learned through doing research on this topic, and really bring some light to some of the evidence-based research that's out there versus some of the anecdotal. And not that there's anything wrong with anecdotal. It's great, right? And I just want to make sure that we are able to kind of look at some of the things that there is more work on. And again, there's a long way we have to really get more information on this conversation and really bring it to forefront. But I'm really excited, Nika, for always for your commitment to being someone who is willing to bring up the conversation of sex and allowing the freedom for this conversation to be talked about.
Thank you. And it really is an honor to have you here on the show. And I know you did a lot of research. You came and like grappling with some things. Like, it's very real. Every time I get on this show, I'm like, am I going to say something that I'm going to have to deal with later? And at the same time, right?
And I get a call. Right? It's like, is that a, you know, whether it's a family member or, you know, just anybody and it's very real.
Yeah. And there's a whole political correctness to how we're supposed to do things, how we're supposed to talk about it or not. And I really appreciate you for not falling into that already always paradigm of like, I can't do this because it's too uncomfortable. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely. So I'm excited to share some information. I'll let you kind of take the lead. So again, as I was looking through this topic, right? I mean, again, I was like, should I even Google nutrition and sex? You know, like on my work browser, I was like, I don't think that's a good idea. Right. I mean, again, I have my, so that's like how it started. Because I really wanted to see what's out there. And, you know, I was pretty amazed at some of the information. And again, I'm not going to say that not everything that's out there is there's definitely information. I will say a couple things before I even talk about this topic, about my personal view of nutrition. Again, if this is the first time you're hearing me, I have a unique approach to nutrition. I really think that some of the problems we see with nutrition has to do with thinking that one size fits all. And I'm all about personal nutrition. So that's really what I stand for. We are all unique. We're all different. And I'm really committed that we all discover for ourselves. I don't tell anybody what to do. I am their guide and support them in their health journey. So that's kind of a little bit about my approach to health and to nutrition specifically. So with that in mind, again, I do want to say, if there's something you're doing out there that's working for you, that's great. Keep doing that. Again, it's like, I'm going to offer different kinds. It's like if we're going shopping and I'm like, how about this? And how about that? And you're like, yeah, this is great. That, no, thank you. So that's So I want everyone to feel that way about this conversation. So whatever I say that maybe you feel like, well, like I've tried this and it's really great. Well, that's awesome. Please keep going. I'm just trying to shed some light on some of the information that's out there. I'll start with, oh, go ahead. Did you want to say
something? Yeah, I just wanted to just put in, like, I really appreciate the work that you've done around finding the most legitimate, I would say, information out there. I really didn't want this conversation to be like a series of anecdotes around, like, you know, what'll make you taste good, or like, you know, those other things that you kind of get in magazines. I'm like, there's so much more to what's available. So thank you so much. And please go right ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, magazines are great, right? And they have great information. And I love that. And I, you know, again, when I was looking, I saw some things that I was like, oh, that's interesting. And again, my commitment was to really look at the science, right? As a public health dietitian and a professor in nutrition and public health, like I really wanted to make sure I bring you the science, at least what we know. And again, there's not a lot of research on this, but what I found, which was, I thought was really interesting, was the connection between fertility and having a great sex drive. And those two are very connected. I talked to Nika a little bit about this. I was talking about how it's so okay to talk about fertility, right? But it's not okay to talk about nutrition for great sex. And that to me was, you know, I thought, you know, I had to really think about that for myself. And I thought, what is that about? And even the conversation about like wanting to have a baby, because you might want great sex and not want to have a baby.
right. And like, it leaves out all the people who don't want kids. It's like, so how am I supposed to get those answers?
I see in the chat. Thanks, Betty. Yeah, like definitely there is a link. Absolutely. There is a direct correlation between really having that great sex drive and fertility. There you cannot separate those two. And that was something interesting that I really found. So I started really digging in some of the research that was pertaining to fertility. Again, because once your body is ready to you know, conceive, like it's the same drive, it's the same hormones, it's the same, right? And as species, if we think about like going back, that, you know, again, the whole point of having a great sex drive is to produce, right? Like, so that we can, right? So that's part of that whole conversation. And again, interestingly, there's so much information about nutrition and fertility. So I kind of looked at some of that, and then I looked at some of the information about specific to, you know, again, increasing your libido and just being able to have your hormones work better for you so that you can have a better experience and even having the sex drive, right? Because that's another whole conversation. And again, I do want to say one, go ahead. Sorry.
There's
something
comment in the chat says, so that's why I didn't have any issues getting pregnant.
Pregnant. Absolutely. You'll see, right? Like everybody who, I shouldn't say everybody. That's not quite the case. But again, a lot of times we see people that are, not necessarily even wanting to get pregnant, right? That get pregnant. And then we definitely see the other side. And again, that's not the conversation we're having today. And again, it's definitely connected. I definitely don't want to go in that direction. But one of the things I wanted to say was, again, I'm focusing on nutrition because that's my expertise. And it's not just about nutrition. So again, as a public health, I do need to mention like sleeping, right? Smoking is definitely a factor. Again, drugs, alcohol, those all impact how we feel, our hormones. Again, my focus is going to be on nutrition. I'm going to talk a little bit about nutrigenomics, which is I can't say it's new because it's been around for a while, and it's really part of the epigenetics, really looking at how does nutrition play a role in our genes, right? And how is our genes connected to, you know, having that drive and being able to enjoy ourselves in a way where it's still self-sustaining. And again, what I'm going to say is going to be like, oh my gosh, really? Like, why is the answer great nutrition? That's how it seems. I really, like, I keep why hearing the answer, about
you got to eat right.
It really is connected. So I'm going to kind of break it down a little bit, because I think we have this notion about good nutrition, like I'm not ever supposed to eat the foods that I love, and it's not the case. So one of the most researched diets is the Mediterranean diet. Again, what's so unique about the Mediterranean diet is it's pretty moderate to high in fat content. But the fat content is more what we call quote unquote good fats, which are more your monounsaturated fats and your omega-3s. And those fats, what's great about them is they're more anti-inflammatory. So they actually support your overall cells. One thing we don't necessarily always know is every single cell in our body is made up of fat, and the type of fat we eat impacts each and every cell. So when yes, absolutely. And then what we want to do is we want to have a ratio between what we call not so good fats or your bad fats and your good fats. So that's what we want to do. It's not that you don't want to eat any what we call saturated fats, or again, I don't know how much trans fats now is in our food at this point, because I think there's been so much attention on it. And then again, having more of what we call omega-6 fatty acids. So again, fats are great. They're necessary for our health. And for years and years, we heard that fats were not good for us and all of that.
Before you jump on, I feel like we're pretty familiar with omega-3 fatty acids. We kind of heard about them. They've been, you know, kind of promoted a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about omega-6 and like maybe where those show up?
Yeah, right. So again, so both types of fat impact every cell, and omega-6 specifically is more of a pro-inflammatory. So they two work together. One is more supports to not cause inflammation, whereas the other is more inflammatory. And so the more our cells become rigid, that means we're eating more of the omega-6 fats. So just a little background, so that when I talk about the Mediterranean diet, like really it's about the fats, and then we'll talk about some of the foods. You know, I see in the chat about the famous oysters. Everyone knows that. It's like the most, I swear, I think if you look up like nutrition and sex, the first word that comes up is oysters. I wonder if like the board for oysters put that out there so people would buy more.
No, that's a really good marketing tactic.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, why would you eat them?
Yeah, I wonder about it because it's like one of those nutrients that come up. Yeah, I love that. So again, what I'm going to focus on is going to be more of the nutrients. So one of the reasons why they talk about oysters is because of the zinc level, especially raw oysters. They're very high in zinc. And again, zinc has been shown to really help impact zinc and vitamin C. So for example, the sperm contains live vitamin C. It actually has vitamin C in it. And if you're low in vitamin C, then you're automatically going to get impacted by your sperm count. Cause our bodies are smart. If it has to choose between having vitamin C levels for your skin production or for collagen synthesis, right, versus sperm count, it's going to impact that. So just another nutrient. So again, we see vitamin C, we definitely see zinc as a link. So what are some of the foods that are high in vitamin C? I mean, we all know about oranges, right? Why? Because they did a great job marketing. Have you heard about pepper? Marketing is everything, right? Florida oranges have been marketed and they do a great job. So everybody knows about vitamin C and oranges. But do we know that melons, for example, have vitamin C? We wouldn't even think about it because it's not citrus. Or strawberries are a great source of vitamin C. Strawberries also have a lot of flavonoids and polyphenols, which are have also been shown to have some link in really supporting overall health, and especially our sex drive. So we see a lot about that. Again, we're learning more and more about flavonoids and polyphenols. They are I call them hashtag new vitamins. That's kind of how I relate to them. Chocolate covered strawberries are great, right? Again, some of the cliches that you see all the time, right? Understand that, oh, that's what's going on.
They're valid.
Absolutely. Again, so I always joke about this when I teach my classes. I talk about how recipes, I say back in the day, they couldn't go and get a blood work done to find out what helped people survive and what didn't. But for example, rice and beans, right? We all know rice and beans, but rice and beans together make a complete protein. And it was the difference between survival or not. So the recipes, all the things we hear from, from our past or our ancestors, there's definitely a lot of validity to it because there wasn't a lot of research back then. So they really relied on what helped. And again, nutrition and food was a huge source of it. Some of the other foods that I want to talk about are the B vitamins. So B vitamins in general. So we call it a B complex. So you might have heard of a B complex. And again, maybe not really be sure about what is that, right? So the B vitamins all work together. They really work as a team. They work in unison. If you're deficient in one B vitamin, chances are you're deficient in another, and it's just going to impact your metabolism and your overall, the way your body functions. So the main major B vitamins that we're going to just talk about is B6, or pyridoxin. Again, B6 has been shown to really impact our serotonin, which really helps our mood. And there are some studies that use it as an antidepressant even, because it really impacts, and it's kind of a key nutrient in being able to convert the amino acid into the active serotonin. So that is one. Again, B6.
This might sound totally weird, but I actually love the B vitamins. Like when you said that, I was like, oh, this is exciting for me. So,
oh, good.
I'm excited to learn these details.
Yeah. I mean, again, B6 is one that we don't hear about as much. Like, again, there's a lot of talk about, we hear a lot about, thiamine or B1, again, like if somebody is dealing with any kind of, drinking, or again, if there's alcohol in the picture, they're like, okay, take thiamine or B1. We hear a lot about niacin. Niacin is used a lot in sports, because it's a vasodilator. Again, also for, a sex drive, I think, because again, it definitely impacts, so much of, the blood and circulation. So definitely B3 or niacin is talked a lot about. Riboflavin is more of it's B2. It's not as talked about because it's, the deficiency generally just causes what we call chelosis, the cuts around your mouth or your tongue. So if anybody's experiencing that, that's what, most likely have a, B2 or again, taking a B vitamin. Riboflavin is B2, and what it causes chelosis. So if you're getting like frequent cuts around your tongue or around your lips, a lot of times that could be a sign of the B2 deficiency.
Wow. Okay. I love these details. I feel like I should really be taking notes, even though
it's recorded. I mean, you have it recorded. You can watch it anytime, right? With anybody else. Again, so the easy answer is just take a B complex. But I want to make sure people know what is in there. The other thing I wanted to say about the B vitamins is folic acid or folate. So again, I'm sure a lot of us have heard about folate because of the work that Marcia Dimes have done. It really impacts neural tube defect, which is it happens in babies that are born. But again, also folic acid or folate is a great nutrient to make sure you have enough of for your sex drive. Some of the foods, again, avocados, beans are a great source. Beets are a great source. Green leafy vegetables, those are great sources for folate. And then B12, again, especially if you're a vegetarian or vegan, making sure you're getting your B12. Again, if you can get a B12 shot every few months, or again, if you're taking, nowadays they have supplements that are more, again, they're able to make B12 from an algae yeast. So again, if somebody wanted to, they can definitely do that and take it in that way. I'm trying to think. There's so many benefits to the B vitamins in general, but again, energy in general, that's what they do. They help with metabolism. So what that essentially means is it's your energy source. without your B vitamins, your body wouldn't be able to convert and make carbohydrates. You wouldn't be able to use glucose. Is there any other vitamins? Okay,
is
vitamin
that okay to take daily?
Which one?
Is that okay to take daily? Vitamin B.
Yeah, absolutely. So B vitamins are what we call water soluble, similar to vitamin C. And so there's not as much of an impact to taking them if you're taking what we call mega dosing. It's not going to be as of an issue as it is if you're taking a fat soluble vitamin, which stay in your body. So for the examples are vitamin D, I was going to talk about. So vitamin D is, I'm going to call it the superstar of all vitamins. There's so many things that they're looking at vitamin D for, from allergies to, again, originally vitamin D was discovered in kids having rickets, where they were having parentheses legs, and it had to do with them not getting enough sunlight. And again, very few foods are naturally high in vitamin D. So the only food I could tell you to take are mushrooms, pretty much, for vitamin D, which are pretty good. Okay. Again, mushrooms and oysters, the favorite. So again, vitamin D is going to be the last vitamin I'll talk about. And then we can talk about iron. So again, just making sure your vitamin D levels are good. Again, the thing about vitamin D that we're seeing now is more, everyone's deficient basically. And it's part of that is because they increase the limits for our vitamin D levels. They realized that we actually need more vitamin D than we thought we did. And so it shows up that we're all deficient in a way, there's a lot of us that might seem deficient. So it's not a bad idea to get that checked. Especially in regards to your optimal health, which includes your sex drive, because again, I can't really tell you a lot of foods that are really high in vitamin D. Getting sunlight is definitely a great way. You do need to make sure.
I'm going to go sunbathe later on.
Yeah, which is great. One thing I'll say is for us that have darker skin, we actually don't observe as much. We don't convert vitamin D as well as somebody who's very fair skin or light. So just something, okay. Something to think. No, I was pretty disappointed in myself when I was like, what? Again, there's multiple factors. I'm not going to go into it. I think I'm already geeking everybody out. I'm surprised everyone's still staying with me.
No, it's so awesome. We actually have a couple of questions in the chat before we jump into iron. Inez says, what about omega 9?
Yeah, so the omegas and how, just so that we have a little background about like what it is it's the carbon. So when we call omega-3s in the fatty acid structure, we have a double bond, and the double bond, and again, I apologize if I'm just being way too geeky right now, but I don't know how else to explain this. When you have a double bond, it means that the carbon in the fatty acid is open and available. And so where the double carbons are, we've seen that it impacts the way that fat behaves. And so omega 3 and omega 6 and then omega 9. So these are where those fatty acids, those double bonds are, and they behave differently. Again, I'm not as much familiar with omega 9. So that you have a little bit of reference about what that is. It's just where the double carbon is, and it shows us that it impacts and it behaves different, how our body is able to process. The most important thing is it impacts our immune function. It impacts, we call it the eicosanoids, which directly impact how our body reacts, like immunity-wise. Again, if you're not feeling so good and if you're feeling sick, obviously your sex drive is going to go down. And so that's kind of how it's connected and overrelated. Again, I see a question about, are there any particular vitamins that specifically support the reproductive system? Absolutely. Again, the prenatal vitamins, which have a lot of the things that I talked about, again, are not any, they are connected to fertility. So definitely important. And again, the B vitamins, especially making sure if you're even thinking about, or if you're not thinking about, again, taking a prenatal vitamin, their potency is a lot better than regular vitamins. So that would definitely be something to think about.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Would you take prenatals to up your sex drive?
Yeah, absolutely. I say so because again, they're connected. They're not any different, but I think as we kind of talked about this, I was like, if they're not, so if you're going to up your sex drive, right, and you're like eating great, you're making sure you're feeling good about yourself, you're exercising, right, you look good where you feel good, right, all of that, so you better watch out because you're ready for fertility. So again, kind of like a little like we heard earlier about, you know, why is it that some people have no issue getting pregnant while others really struggle? Again, this is definitely part of it. So watch out, you know, do what you got to do to make sure, you know, again, unless you're planning to have a baby, right? You want to make sure you're clear about that. So if there isn't, I think I answered everything.
There's one last one. It says, I once knew a guy whose semen didn't smell or taste like anything. He had a really great diet. Is there a connection? So like taste of semen.
That's a really good question. I honestly can't say that I know. What I can tell you is if you're eating really clean, then definitely your body's going to respond to it. It's just like any other, it's just like as if, again, every body's different too. So, that's all I can say about it. I think being clean is important. Did you want to say something, Nika?
I have two anecdotes.
I know you're
not substantiated. However, I did hear that eating pineapple will make you taste sweet down. Spicy foods will make you taste tart. And I had a lover who ate bananas and he was really sweet, really sweet. Okay. All my business.
That's good. All right. Well, I will say something about pineapples. So pineapples in many cultures are the food that you give, if you're dealing with any kind of healing, and again, this is, so there's definitely a lot of, high amounts of vitamins and minerals and flavonoids in pineapples. So definitely I wouldn't be surprised about that because again, in many, many cultures, they offer and give pineapple to anyone who's sick or healing. You might have heard that, and that's another anecdote. But again, I'm very curious as to see some of the research showing, you know, like actual nutrition behind that. Going into, can menopausal women take prenatal vitamins? Absolutely. Honestly, anybody can take a prenatal vitamin. There's no hormone in there. It's just vitamins, and it's just higher doses. So, and their potency is pretty good. Again, when you're taking a vitamin, you want to look at, that it's a standardized vitamin, so that you know you're getting the specific amount of dose that you want it to get. And, you know, again, it's a $80 billion industry. It's huge, huge industry. So, you know, you just want to make sure you're buying what you're paying for, making sure that it's a bigger company so that they can really stand behind their products There's a lot of great products. Again, I don't want to endorse any specific one. But again, there's a lot of great products that are out there that really did a good job of standardizing their vitamins. So you're taking a same dose for every pill that you take. And that's really important. And speaking of, again, the next nutrient or mineral that I'm going to talk about is iron. And iron is huge. Again, I know, you know, for all of us that watched Popeye growing up, right? We all are kind of associate iron with spinach. What I found out, and again, I don't know if this is true or not, was that when they first discovered the iron levels in spinach, they actually made a mistake where the decimal point was. And so the amount of iron in spinach is actually not as much. I mean, I know there's some issues with bioavailability, which means how much our body can uptake the iron from some greens. So spinach isn't as highly absorbed as some of the other greens that are absorbed much higher. But one thing that I want to mention and why iron is connected to your overall sex drive has to do with if you're iron deficient, we call it iron deficiency anemia. It's actually the number one cause of low productivity in the world. And a lot of times it's misdiagnosed in kids for ADHD, especially if kids drink lots of milk. Again, the typical, American diet, we offer lots of milk to kids, which is great. But again, it's recommended that they get their iron levels checked, especially if you're dealing with hyperactivity or dealing with literally low iron can cause clumsiness, can cause, because again, you're literally not getting enough oxygen because again, so iron is part of your red blood cells. Your red blood cells carry oxygen in your body. And if you're low in iron, that means your body can't make red blood cells. And if you're not getting red blood cells, that literally means you're not getting as much oxygen. So again, I mean, that's like a simple way to put it. I don't, trying to make it as,
yeah,
so that's another nutrient that I think it's really important to get tested, know your iron levels, know what's going on. I mean, is it high? Is it low? And then there's what we call an FE workup that, you know, just because your iron is low, you want to know why. So you want to talk to your, you know, work with your doctor to find out why is my iron low? Like what is going on? Because there's different reasons. Sometimes it's just diet. So then you can easily, of course, have more foods that contain iron, or it could be something else. So that's another one. I'm trying to look and see if there's any.
I love what you shared about like the clumsiness. I had a friend who was like super, super clumsy. And then she found out she was anemic and she was prescribed like a steak once a week or something. It was like to get her iron levels up. And I never would have made that connection. And now, yeah, it has me like, what I love about these conversations is it has me thinking more compassionately about everything. So
yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad I mentioned it because again, I think it's something that people don't know. I see parents sometimes really struggle with their kids and then it's like, we check their iron levels and sure enough, it's low. And again, they start getting iron and like, it's like night and day what happens to that kid. And you never think of it. You don't think like, oh, I'm iron deficient. And yeah, steak is a great way to raise your iron levels. Again, I want to be sensitive to anyone who is a vegetarian or vegan. So again, there are definitely many different ways to increase your iron levels. But obviously red meat is one of the best ways. It has what we call heme iron, and heme iron has the highest absorption rates. But again, I don't recommend supplements as much, especially for iron, because it's a metal. But again, I think it's really important to work with a physician that you feel comfortable with and you know they're really well-versed in this topic. So the way minerals work is they all compete for the same receptors. So our calcium, iron, zinc, copper, magnesium. So they, all of those minerals compete for the same receptor. So if you start mega dosing, I know like zinc is super popular. Again, eat oysters, okay? To get zinc. Don't necessarily take a zinc supplement. I know zinc has been super popular. Magnesium has been super popular. And again, those end up causing more harm than good, because what you're doing is you're mega dosing on them. And then you're decreasing the absorption of iron and you're decreasing the absorption of calcium, for example, which is, again, also really important. I think another reason I like prenatal vitamins is they're pretty good about these doses. So again, calcium and iron should not be in the same supplement. They really decrease the absorption of one another.
Calcium and iron.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, because again, they're all like fighting for the same receptor.
I feel like I've seen that a million times though. Like, and maybe I haven't, but I feel like I see these combination complex vitamins and supplements, yeah. And I would never think it's like both of those sound good for me. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine if you take it and it's still in a lot of vitamins, because some people are like, you know what? I don't have time to deal with taking 20 pills. And I'm not even endorsing that. I wouldn't even do that myself. I know many people that take like a whole thing of pills, of supplements. And again, if that's working for you, that's great. But again, it's not a problem if you take a multivitamin that has all of them in, but generally, especially if you've been prescribed and someone said, yeah, hey, you're low in iron, then you definitely don't want to take a supplement that has calcium in it. You want to really, just work with your doctor to see, what would be best for me? Because I want my iron levels up. And again, sometimes it's not about what you're eating. Sometimes it's something else. That's why it's important for you to have a correct diagnosis of why is this. Sometimes you are eating enough iron, but then your what we call the total iron binding capacity is low. So the iron is not being picked up. And then again, so there's like a bunch of things. Again, I don't want to go, I can tend to go a lecture on you. That's what I do every week. But that's not where we're here for.
Professionalism expert.
So, no, again, this
so
is what
go
I
ahead.
Like. So, yeah, no, that's, I think, all I have, actually. Again, the only other,
okay.
There's only a couple other things. One was about fiber that I wanted to talk mm-hmm. about. So, again, we're still understanding fiber, and it's not Metamucil. When I say fiber, I'm not talking about Metamucil. I'm talking about like eating a apple. I'm talking about, again, because what you get in an apple is not the same as what you would get in a powder. I'm talking about like really like what kind of foods can you have that really support you, has you feel the best. But again, having more high fiber diet shows really a great impact. And then a more of a low glycemic index foods. And simply what we want to do is we don't want to keep triggering insulin. Every time we eat lots of sweets, then we're triggering our insulin. And insulin is what we call an anabolic hormone. It supports growth. But again, if we're not in a growing age or stage, then it's kind of holding on to the sugar, and it doesn't allow for the sugar to actually go into the cell. If your insulin levels are chronically high, your cells start to get desensitized to them. it's kind of like having an alarm on all the time, right? Mm-hmm. If you have the siren going, after a while, you're just like, the siren's going.
You stop hearing it.
You stop hearing it. It's not going to have the impact that it needs to have. So those were the two other things that I kind of wanted to talk about when it comes to different kinds of foods.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, so circling back to a couple of things you said earlier, you mentioned nutrigenetics and epigenetics. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of dig a little bit, you know, a little bit more into that conversation.
That's great. Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I forgot to talk a little bit more about it. So nutrigenomics, is really looking at your genetics and how it impacts our overall health. Again, there's a bunch of companies that are now doing testing. You might've heard of, 23andMe. Mm-hmm. 23andMe is more, health-based. They will focus on your actual overall health and like what kind of like your ancestry, like your genes, what are they showing? Like, what are you more susceptible to? Like, are you more susceptible to things like diabetes or, but it really can also impact your sex drive in the sense of, again, it's your genetics, right? And your fertility in a way. So that's kind of, there's different, companies that do testing. There's a couple more, there, again, I'm trying to think, you do want to be careful with the companies and doing testing. Again, what we don't know is once you get tested and that information is out there, can that information be used, you know, like to be provided to an insurance company, for example. So those are some of the things to really think about if you do get tested. I'm imagining we're going to have more privacy laws in regards to like your data. But again, in this day and age with data being the driver for so many things, right? It's just something to think about. I definitely recommend doing the testing. I think it's good to know. You know, I think the ancestry is another one. Again, they're not focused on health. They are more help you with like finding like where you're like originally from. But again, that also can impact your overall health and you know, and that whole conversation. And again, there is a couple of companies that do genetic-based meals. Have you heard of that? Or
I heard about not genetic-based meals, but a friend of mine underwent a genetic study and found out that they're like her body doesn't absorb certain things taken in certain ways, so like it doesn't make sense for her to have them.
Yeah, so again, I'm still learning about and then like looking at how much of that is actually science-based versus, you know, but definitely there are some food companies. There was a couple that do what we call, they call meal prepping for your, like based on your genetics. They're getting more and more popular too. So that's another area that we see and hear about. The other thing about, you know, the whole nutrigenomics is, again, understanding your genes when it comes to your overall health. I'm going to focus on this conversation because it's something that I'm passionate about. Like I'm a dietitian because I am committed that all people live the best quality of life. And what that means is it doesn't mean that, okay, well, Nika, you're 5'5" and you know, you should weigh 125 pounds because that's what the IBM, the ideal body weight is. So that is, again, more and more understanding for your genetics, your unique body type is going to be different. So it's not like, oh, and ironically, that's still connected to your fertility, and it's connected to your overall sex drive. Because again, if you're too underweight, or if you're quote unquote too overweight, that can impact how you, for one, psychologically, obviously, how you feel about your body and yourself, and then also can impact your the way your body is in you know, and just like being able to have and be fertile. So those, yeah. That's another, that's kind of a little bit about how nutrigenomics, and like, again, epigenetics is kind of, that whole, world. And then the nutrigenomics is kind of like a little slice of that.
Got it. Yeah. So, that actually brings up a few things for me. Like I was thinking as you were saying it about like how in families, like if the parents are larger or heavy set than the children might be. And yes, there's a conversation around like nutrition, but also like, like the diet, the shape of the family over time. And also like the food that's available. So like there's, I don't know, there's a couple of different things colliding. But I actually also just thought about someone else I know who, like culturally, they come from a family that like you only have sex to make babies. And like that's what you do. And so now I'm very curious of like, is that in their epigenetics to like have their libido specifically associated with procreation? Like that's, so in curiosity.
And that's a really good, that's a really good question. Again, I don't think that like physiologically that your body, or your, even your genes would, cause again, it's not something you can control. Like if, you know, like the whole fertility is something that's there. And again, can you impact it? Absolutely. You can impact it by, your nutrition. You can impact it by your health, by exercising, by sleep, right? All of that impacts, how you feel overall. Like again, if, smoking, drinking, all of those things impact, again, because it's causing those crashes. You're having that high and then you're having that crash. Again, I think sometimes we, the impact of the psychological is also a huge part here. So again, if you've been told your whole life, like this is, you know, like you only have sex to have babies, right? And you're not interested in having a baby, then it really impacts that because they're like, okay, I'm doing something I'm not supposed to be doing. You know, again, right. I'm not an expert in that area, but I do know as a human, like, again, how I feel about myself and my body and how I react, or, you know, I can have the best nutrition in the world. But again, if that's a conversation back in the background of my mind, that's going to impact me for sure. I see a message that is in the chat. I think it's about the nutrigenomics and just the whole genetic testing. Mm-hmm. That it says now they're using this information to track relatives of criminals. That's just really crazy to me. I'm not surprised by it. Again, I haven't gotten tested myself because I was like, I don't feel comfortable. Like I was thinking of like going and testing under like a pseudonym just so that I, you know, because again, I'm very much involved in the healthcare world and I know how much tracking happens. You know, so, that's really interesting. Finding criminals through, family DNA. Yeah, again, there's a lot of, with anything, right? You could use it for a source of good, and really support and empower or not. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying like we can use it in so many different ways. But again, the work in epigenetics and genetics and nutrigenomics is really fascinating. One of the things that they're looking at is aging, for example. I know it's not kind of connected to but again, one of the things we're looking at is, for example, the intermittent fasting, right? Mm-hmm. And I know it's a super popular topic, but how fasting actually, or the intermittent fasting or mimicking, is actually impacting your cells' age. So you can actually live longer, essentially, through that. So that's a lot of exciting work that we see, again, that is really not inside of this conversation, but it could be connected, right?
I mean, you know, you pointed to a couple of things that are like, huh. A friend of mine was telling me about fasting and like how it healed a bunch of stuff. And I was like, yeah, I believe that. I'll believe it when I see it. And now I'm like, really? The fountain of youth is in not eating? Okay.
The mimicking is really great because it's not, you're not necessarily like starving yourself. And then again, I am a promoter of people eating whatever they feel like is best for them. I follow the intuitive eating guidelines, as we've talked about. So I'm not necessarily for restricting. And the way that the intermittent fasting works, it's just very fascinating. So you're not really restricting, you're just limiting the time that you're eating. And it could be done in a way where you're really not experiencing deprivation. So again, I feel like we don't have enough time for me to start like really going in that big, gigantic explosion. But one of my favorite authors on this topic, if anyone's interested, is it's a book called The Longevity Diet. And it talks about the intermittent fasting, and it talks about mimicking fasting. And it's, Dr. Longo from USC. He's the head of the genetics department and anti-aging. And he's got some good work on that. If you wanted to, you know, look that up, Nika, to read a little bit more about it. But definitely there's more and more growing body of research that we see that's really impacting it. So I don't know. I feel like we talked all over the place. Hopefully it made a difference.
That was perfect. I definitely think we learned a lot. We got a lot of information and availability, like, you know, the conversation on ADHD. Thank you for pointing out the conversation around the DNA tests. Never occurred to me. Haven't had one. And now I'm like, maybe not. and, you know, all the resources you provide. So thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You for your time. Yeah.
My pleasure. It's so great to be here. And looking forward to all your episodes and you know, possibly being here again.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. The ITCast is our community outreach podcast that aims to increase diversity in conversations on health and sexuality. Through this work, we're creating a world where all people feel loved, honored, and respected. Join us. This is your last opportunity to sign up for the Tantra series, 5-week session. So please check that out on our website at theitcast.com. Information is on the calendar. And also visit us on Patreon to support the ITCast. Subscribe to this YouTube channel and share with your community. Thank you so much. And we'll see you here next week.